Hey guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Now, I want to share those conversations with you. We're going to hear from female entrepreneurs, industry experts, and some major female badasses on a global level. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Big Move podcast. Today is very much wellness focused. I am sitting down with Sasha Sabapathy, who is the founder of Glowbar. Glowbar is a wellness company for women based in London, which has been written up by Vogue, Glamour, Birdie, New York Times, The Daily Mail, and more. They are best known for their infrared sauna pods and insanely Instagrammable cafe. Sasha is a brand planner turned chef who has spent her life between Malaysia, London, and New York. She created Glowbar out of a desire to share with other women stress management remedies that she has discovered over the years. Sasha, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming. We're sitting in my flat. Thanks for popping over.
It's so close. It's literally a 5-minute walk from Glowbar. So
it's literally a five minute walk. And I've heard so much about you. But in addition to that, because I live by Glowbar, I literally walk by pretty much every day. So I feel like I know the place very well.
Yeah, that's so convenient for you. And you need to come back more for the infrared saunas and matcha.
Yes. I can't wait to get into everything. I feel like I have a bajillion a wellness focused questions for you. And I can't wait to get into it, but we'll kind of start with a couple icebreaker questions. I always ask my guests these two, which the first is, what are the first three things that you do when you wake up in the morning?
So generally I wake up quite early, and the first thing I do without a fail is let my dogs out. I've got two dogs, a German Shepherd and a Shih Tzu, and they wake up super, super early. So I let the dogs out, and then I normally make myself a drink. It sort of depends on the day I've had beforehand. If I've been able to get my good 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep, I do hot water, apple cider vinegar and ashwagandha. Otherwise I'll just make myself an almond milk matcha latte with ashwagandha. And then after that, I tend to brush my teeth, and which sounds super boring and regular, but that's actually my meditation time. So I read a book called The Miracle of Mindfulness about 7 or 8 years ago. I had a very sort of holistic therapist when I was living in New York. And aside from sort of doing cognitive behavioral therapy, he tried to get me really into mindfulness, and he gave me this book. And I'm really, really bad at meditating, to the point that I now need to go take a course on it. But there was one tip in it that really resonated with me, which was to practice mindfulness. When you brush your teeth, you literally only focus on brushing your teeth. So you focus on every tooth, every groove, the aspect of cleaning your teeth, instead of doing what we all do, which is plan the day ahead of us, mm-hmm. or think about the day we just had. So that's sort of, for me, it's quite a nice way to start my day, because it's like animal time, bit of me time, and then sort of refreshing my mind before the day begins.
Yeah, I actually love that tip, because I feel like we all try to meditate, whether that's 5-10 minutes, look out the window, sit and be quiet. It almost is another handy way of actually fitting in your meditation.
Exactly. And a lot of people just find it really hard to find the time, firstly, because they say you need to do 20 minutes a day, and loads of people, they just find that really overwhelming. They keep putting it off. Or some people, they just find that their mind wanders. So at least by doing sort of a task-based meditation, I think a lot of people who meditate would say this doesn't count as meditation. But for me, it still gives me the same thing, because my mind goes completely blank during the time. Just having something task-based means that my mind doesn't wander as easily as it would otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. I love that tip. Okay, second icebreaker question. What is your favorite alcoholic beverage?
Tequila.
Ooh, yes, you had me there.
I love tequila. I got into it because I went through a paleo phase, and they were like, okay, alcohol is bad, but tequila is fine.
No
and way. I was like, yes, okay, I can get on board this. I actually found that it was, it responded really well to it. It's, it's a lot less sort of carby and sugary than other drinks.
Sure.
So I don't get as much of a hangover, and I just love it with a bit of fresh lime and soda water.
Sure. And tequila is an upper versus yes. all the other alcohols.
100%. I don't drink very often, but when I do, it's always tequila, and it's good tequila. I'm a Casamigos kind of gal.
Okay. Oh, yes. Casamigos all the way. Mm-hmm. Do you find it challenging to find in London?
Yes, definitely. I mean, so the house pour in most bars in London is actually really good quality. It's called Altos, and it was actually one of my old clients when I was working in New York. So I'm always like, Altos,
literally over here.
Oh my god,
in
I see that. I love that
in
one.
My bar cart. It's a good one.
Yeah, it's really good quality for the price point. So I'm okay with that. But normally, if I want to have like a nice evening, I'm always like Casamigos, and they're like, we have Patron, and I'll always say no to Patron.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Oh, you had me at tequila.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to just chat on your background, like where you're from, sort of like where you grew up, back to basics. You and I have never met. So where are you originally from?
So I'm from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I was born there. My whole family still lives there. I'm the only one, apart from a few of my cousins who are at university and stuff, who live in the UK. And so, yeah, I was born there. I ended up going to boarding school in the UK when I was 13. I was just really obsessed with Enid Blyton books and Mallory Towers and stuff like that. And I was just like, from a really young age, always begging my parents to send me to boarding school. And they were like, why do you want to leave us? Like, your life here is amazing. And it was incredible. I was outside all the time. There was so much nature. I was really brought up in a holistic healing household because Malaysians are just very much in tune with what plants have given us and stuff like that. But I came to the UK when I was 13. And then I was back and forth a lot because I was always home for half terms and holidays and stuff like that. And I was here for 9 years, actually, so for school, and then I was here for university. Then I worked here for a year doing brand strategy, and then I ended up moving to New York, where I was for 5 years until 2¾ years ago.
Okay, cool. So you've done the whole New York living, mm-hmm. the whole London living. I love to have the New York versus London debate. Is there a city that you prefer for any reason?
Oh gosh, that's such a hard question. And I think it's, I don't know how to be diplomatic.
Yeah, right.
So I loved New York from my 20s. I think it is the best city to be in your 20s. It's just incredibly vibrant. You know, there's so much going on. You can, it really helps you find yourself. Like I had to adult really quickly in New York. And you really learn who you are and what your boundaries are as well, because I think people will really take you for a ride in the city. So I learned a lot while I was there, but I did, you know, I got burnout when I first moved there. Then I had to learn how to sort of, like, you know, lead a more balanced lifestyle. And then by the end, I was kind of like, I feel like I've done it. You know, I've done dating in New York. I've done literally living on a shoestring budget because I wanted to be, you know, especially every summer, I was like, I want to be in Montauk every weekend. I want to be going out in the West Village every Thursday. I want to be doing this, I want to be doing that. And I was just like constantly broke.
Yeah.
So London for my like late 20s now that I'm in my 30s is definitely way better. It's a better pace of life. There's more nature. There's, you know, I prefer going to a pub versus like a really busy bar now. So
yeah, totally. Yeah. I feel like New York literally kicks you in the ass and it like really forces you to grow up. I too spent my 20s there and I totally feel you on that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I still definitely miss it. I was just there last week and I was like, God, the energy of the city, it's so enigmatic, you know, like it really just sucks you in.
Yeah.
But it is also just so exhausting. And I think when you're used to, not that London's a slow pace of life in any means, but it's slower definitely to New York. And when you're used to a pace like this and then you go back to the city, you're like, oh my gosh, how do people do this every day? And you forget that people live literally like my apartment was half the size of this kitchen living room area. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, how do people do that?
I know. It's insane. And so that kind of leads me to my question about like London, things that you love most. Is it that sort of it's a bit more manageable than New York? Are there any other things that
I love that it's more it's definitely more balanced than New York. I think it is a bit more affordable than New York as well. And sometimes I'm like, is it actually more affordable or is it the state of mind? So I feel like whenever I'm in New York anyway, myself, I'm like, yeah, I'll get that coffee. I'll get that matcha.
Yeah.
I'll grab that, whatever. And then all of a sudden, I'll take a cab, whatever. Just get a cab. I can't be bothered to walk to the subway. Just get a cab.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, I spent like X amount of dollars within 4 hours. But in London, people are just more sensible. So maybe that's why London seems more affordable. So there's more of a balance in that sense. I definitely think that there's a lot more nature readily available to you in London. So, you know, in New York, unless you're living by Central Park or you're living, you know, in Prospect Park in Brooklyn, you don't really see that many trees, you know, unless you're on a very pretty tree-lined street in the West Village. And so, but in London, there are parks everywhere. And I mean, granted, it is like raining a lot of the time, but this time of year, it's beautiful to have that. So I definitely love that. I love to be able to, I mean, we were just talking briefly earlier about the ability to travel way more easily when you're in the UK and being able to just sort of like nip over to Paris, nip over to Spain, Italy, and even going to Asia, it's, 10 hours to Bangkok from London versus 24 hours from New York. It just, the world just seems way more readily accessible to you from London than
That's
from the States.
That's so true. That's like the biggest thing that we've noticed since being over here is just being able to, right, like hop on that flight to Italy and it's, under, whatever, £150 or exactly. Whatever it is.
It's so much cheaper. And then, I mean, there's so much to explore in America. So I love that, especially not being American. I was on the West Coast. I was going to Texas and to Georgia and, going to Miami, twice a year. And it was super fun to be able to explore America. But I think definitely as I get older as well, and as you think about the fact that your travels will be limited when you have children, it's nice to be in the UK and be able to say, like, I can literally, go to all the places, in the rest of the world, experience other cultures. And it's just so quick and easy and affordable. And, people are living, loads of my friends are scattered. I'm not sure about you, mm-hmm. but my friends are scattered everywhere. And so now I get to see them more often as well because, I'm just a bit more central.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so nice too. So I kind of want to get into your career. You've done so much at such a young age already.
Yeah, I don't even know how.
So how did you go from studying to be a chef to sort of launching your own business? What did that transition look like for you?
So I ended up actually sort of studying to be a chef just purely due to the fact that I didn't want to be doing my job anymore in New York. So I was working for a digital social agency and I was doing sort of digital and brand strategy over there. And I liked it, but I just didn't feel fulfilled. And I always wanted to be in wellness and I always wanted to be in something to do with food. I loved cooking. The kind of idea of people not using their ovens in New York, I think, is a bit of a shame because it's true, but I cooked a lot. So people were always like, you cooked in New York? But I guess I was the one person who was always having dinner parties and I was always experimenting. And even loads of the brands I worked on, they wanted to have food content and stuff. And so sure. I'd always put my hand up. I was like, I'll be a recipe developer. You don't need to hire an external person. I'll do it. So when I was wanting to sort of leave my job, I didn't really know what I wanted to go into. I knew I didn't want to be doing advertising anymore. And I knew that I didn't want to be in New York anymore. As much as I loved it, I just knew it was time for a change. I'd been there for 5 years. I was entering my late 20s. And I was like, I think it's time to go back to London. My friends were getting married and having children. And I wanted to kind of be around for those experiences too. So I was like, okay, right, what should I do? Well, I'll do a sabbatical while I figure it out. I never took a gap year. And I know in America, not many people do it. But in the UK, it's super, super normal to take a year out just to find yourself, mm-hmm. develop other interests and skills. And I never did that. My parents are really Asian. So I was like, please, can I take a gap year? And they were like, brown people don't do gap years. Go to university. I was like, okay, then. So I took a sabbatical and I went to culinary school and I trained as a chef. And it was an incredible experience. I spent the first 2 days crying. I was watching Julia and Julia at home 2 days straight.
Such a good movie.
Yes, such a good movie. I was crying on the floor of my apartment because I couldn't cut, you had to cut cubes and perfect straight lines and they had to measure 3 millimeters by 3 millimeters by 3 millimeters and you're there with your ruler. And I was honestly I'm not, this is what cooking, being a good cook is about. I'm not cut out for this.
Sure.
But it was amazing. But while I was at culinary school, that's kind of where Global was born from. I actually, at the beginning, I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to end up doing a healthy food catering business. And that was honestly my full intention once I'd kind of got stuck into it. But I was at the pub with my girlfriends and I was talking about, everyone was just super stressed. And I was super stressed because I was, at class from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. cutting perfect cubes.
And so stressful, by the way.
Yeah, so stressful. But I mean, I think, they're training you to go into a Michelin kitchen and I was definitely not, I'm not apt to a Michelin kitchen. I definitely am a good cook, but not like that. But I was meeting up with those of my friends and we were talking about stress and everyone just seemed super, super stressed. And I started telling them about all these different Ayurvedic and traditional Chinese herbs within the adaptogen family that I've been taking for years, that I started taking when I was in New York due to the sort of first burnout I'd had there. No one had heard about them and they all thought it was super weird. They were like, what's happened? You've come back from New York and you've gone all woo-woo. This is so strange. They're like, are you sure you lived in New York and not LA? And I was like, no, it's not woo-woo at all. It's not weird. Like, it's, you know, they're not strange. They're just like superfoods. I was like, do you take, like, have you heard of cacao? Have you heard of, you know, turmeric? Have you heard of beetroot powder? Well, they're just similar. They're completely similar. They're just classified as herbs. And they were like, no, we're not going to take them. And so for me, that's when I had a bit of a light bulb moment. I decided I wanted to sort of shift gears a little bit because I was really passionate about the well-being of all of my friends. And I wanted to share with them things that I just learned along the way. And so that's kind of how I ended up going from advertising to chefing,
sure,
to ending up starting a business that was at the time, definitely unrelated to either of those two things. But I realized that, and now I realize that both of those experiences have sort of helped me get to where I am today.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you talked a little bit about like the stress and anxiety you obviously felt when you were in school to be a chef. Did you experience stress and anxiety kind of all your life? Did you feel like that was like heightened when you were in New York, or was it kind of like a mix of things?
I think that I definitely was a slightly anxious person always. I've always had a lot of social anxiety just because I'm like a very chatty, outgoing person, but I'm also an observer. So for me, I always loved being with friends, but getting thrown into like a massive party where you don't know anyone or you have to go to a networking room, or just even being like in a huge public space, like kind of stressed me out. And it was really heightened therefore being in New York where I didn't know anyone. The city is incredibly hectic. And then it was exasperated essentially by my lifestyle. And I think a lot of people, you know, lifestyle is a huge contributor to stress. So for me, I was at grad school, I was at NYU, and I was doing evening classes. So I was in class from 6 to 9 every evening. I was interning, so I was working at YSL at the time, now Saint Laurent. Actually, they had just become Saint Laurent. So,
okay.
But it was a very stressful time to actually be there with the rebrand. And I was working in the fashion cupboard. Respect to everyone who works in fashion. It is not as glamorous or easy as people think it is. Yeah. I was actually crying every day, like running around New York with massive garment bags and having to try and look cute at the same time. It was really hard. So I was, you know, I was running around all day working for Saint Laurent. And then I was in the evening doing my master's program. And then after that, I was going out every night as well because I was in New York and I was 22 and that's what you do. And that was literally me day in, day out. And I was drinking a lot. I was smoking a lot. I wasn't exercising. I wasn't eating healthy because I was out all the time. And then I'd be having the drunken slice in the evening, you know, at 2 a.m. And then I'd be on the coffee first thing in the morning with the, you know, the sugary creamers, the coffee mate or whatever.
Sure.
And basically one day I just crashed because the stress that my body and my soul was under was just so extreme. And for me, and I think a lot of people can definitely relate to that because especially when we're young, we really want to do everything. We want to like live our best lives, right? And I'm doing some air quotes here. For
yeah, absolutely.
Lives,
I get
because,
it.
We don't realize that's not exactly our best life. So I had a massive burnout as a result of that stress. And that's kind of how I had to really reframe my life as a result of that.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I completely relate. It's a vicious cycle, right? And you're out, you know, whatever it is, 4 or 5 nights a week. And then it's, you know, even into like Sunday fun day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to carry it on to work the next day. You're exactly. Juggling a million things. Yeah, so I completely get that.
It's hard work.
Yeah, totally. So many people I feel like have amazing ideas, but I feel like Glowbar really came to life. You have a brick and mortar in central London. You've been recognized by all these like amazing publications. How do you think Glowbar has kind of been able to stand out amongst, say, like the other wellness companies in the space?
I think it's a combination of things. So firstly, it's really authentic to my story. So I didn't just think that it was a good idea because someone else was doing it or because it seemed trendy. For me, it comes from a really personal space. So we have a few different facets to Glowbar. We do the infrared saunas. We have adaptogens that we put into our drinks and then we sell. And then we have the cafe as well, which has different, you know, different smoothie bowls and stuff in. And we also sell just, you know, other well-being items as well. Just so that's a really fun, holistic experience. But for us, you know, it really started with the adaptogens. That's kind of like what made me shift paths from going to culinary school to starting the business. And I had started taking those adaptogens when I had that burnout. I went to see a doctor at the Student Health Center in NYU because I was extremely anxious. I felt really down. I don't want to say I was depressed because I don't think I wasn't clinically depressed. I was just really, really down and I had low energy. I couldn't get out of bed. And instead of taking, they wanted me to take antidepressants, which for me just didn't seem appropriate for what I was going through. And a friend of mine recommended ashwagandha, which is our best-selling product at Glowbar now. And for me, within 3 to 4 weeks, it really made a difference in my life. I saw massive, massive improvements on a very small scale on a daily basis. But then, by a month, like my life had completely kind of gone back to where it had been before. I'd sort of experienced this burnout, and I was less stressed. I was less anxious. I didn't have the blues anymore. That's sort of my story, and the brand is really rooted in my story. So I think that's kind of one reason why we've done really well. I think it's timing as well. Holistic healing is really having its moment now. I think as a generation, we are all incredibly burnt out. We're tied to technology all the time. We're always on our phones or our laptops or watching TV, or even shopping experiences are now really tech focused. I mean, it's incredible, but you have short stores like Reformation where literally you're on a laptop choosing what to put into your changing room versus looking at them in real life. It is a really great shopping experience, but it just shows sort of like how integrated technology is into our lives now. So that's sort of why things like meditation are really taking off. People are wanting to connect with crystals because they just want to be touching, feeling spiritually connected to something natural and from nature. And that's sort of why adaptogens as well are now starting to do really well, because they're natural, they've been used for centuries, they're rooted in ancient traditions. So it's a combination of those two things. And then I think that my background in advertising and in marketing has helped me understand how people want to be communicated to.
Sure.
We do have beautiful, as you mentioned, really beautiful Instagrammable mm-hmm. setting, but it's not too kitsch. We haven't done anything that's too, it's still very British in a sense, because it's very sensible. It's like sensible Instagrammable versus like having like a massive swing in the middle of the room and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a combination of various different factors. I think we've been quite lucky as well.
Absolutely. And that kind of brings me right into my next question about your branding. Your branding is so on point. I feel like the cafe is this gorgeous like pink and white with like these green plants. Just trying to describe it for the audience, which doesn't even do it justice. But how has that kind of come to life for you? Has that been you all every step of the way? Have you hired a team to sort of help bring the branding alive? Or what did that kind of look like?
So it's definitely a combination. So I had a very focused idea of what I wanted it to be. So for me, it was a women's wellness company. And so I wanted pink to be the primary color. I sort of understand the whole idea of being like, well, just because we're women doesn't mean we want pink. But I also believe in sort of reclaiming things. And I was like, yes, so what if I like pink? That's kind of my attitude towards it. But I wanted it to be very soft, very, and almost a neutral pink. The pink is, it's such a sort of faded pink that it's not fuchsia, it's not in your face.
It's like a perfect like petal, like soft
exactly
baby
it's
pink.
Very very soft. It's very versatile.
I
wanted there to be lots of green in the form of plants, because we are a natural nature oriented business. All the herbs are 100% natural, never been chemically treated, so the plants really bring that to light. For me, like I love white and stuff like that. I love white walls at home. I'm very sort of purist in that sense. So I had an idea of my color scheme. I had an idea of my logo. My logo is sort of similar in design initially, but I did then hire a designer called Emmanuel, who is incredible. She's super chic and French and rocks like a 70s fringe kind of gal. She's amazing. And the moment I met her, I was like, I want you to work on my branding. So she kind of elevated everything, made it more refined, made it more streamlined, because I'm not a designer. I'm a thinker, not a designer. And then I hired a interior design firm called Maker Studio. I had wanted to basically, I called up a friend of mine who works for the Conran Group, and I was like, hey, would you guys be interested in doing my interiors? And she was like, oh, honey, you can't afford us. but I know someone who's gone out on their own, and I think you'd really vibe with her. And so I met up with her old coworker and her business partner, Mel and Lauren, and they were super cool. They were like in their early 30s. They got it like immediately.
Sure.
They're fun, sort of vibrant women. They were exactly so between them and Emmanuel, these were my target audience. Women I related to who were incredibly empowered and empowering and inspirational. And so between sort of the four of us, we were able to bring the brand to life in the various touch points that you have now.
That's ideal. Yeah, it's kind of like working with the resources you have. So, mm-hmm. right, okay, maybe if you can't afford the, you know, the whole enchilada, like, right, they went on their own and they yeah. were able to help you. That's awesome.
Exactly. And I would always recommend that to anyone as well. Like, if you are looking for someone to do your branding, you're looking for someone to do interior design, if you're looking for brick and mortar, anything that you're, any resources that you're looking for, actually ask your friends if they know anyone who's doing yeah. it. Because firstly, if you're going to find someone who can relate to you. Mm-hmm. You don't, and secondly, they're going to be way more affordable as well. You don't want a massive agency where you're paying like extortionate fees for a junior designer to be working on your project. Mm-hmm. This way you're getting someone who's good enough, senior enough to have gone out on their own. They're going to be way more cost effective because you're paying just for their time. And most likely they're going to be able to relate to you on various levels, and you'll be able to have a friendship. Like, I was friends with, and I still am friends with these women, and it's been amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Way better to get a referral if you can through your network. And you'd be surprised too. I've done the same thing, finding like graphic designers just by literally just like asking around first. Mm-hmm. Before I've had to maybe do that like deeper dive, and people are always willing to help, I feel like.
Yeah, I literally just did Facebook posts. I'm not even joking. I literally yeah. just put a thing, and I never use Facebook, so when I use it, people know that it's for something important. Yeah. And I was just like, does anyone know an interior designer?
Yeah.
And that was literally, and I would like maybe like tag one person who I knew might know someone, and that was it. That.
Totally. So, well, you just kind of answered my last question in this sort of category, but are there any other top tips that you would give to someone thinking about making a similar jump and launching their own business? I think you've touched on a couple, and one is like kind of coming from a place of like passion and having like your heart in an idea, mm-hmm. Which I think is amazing. But is there anything else that has really like stuck out to you that you would recommend to someone
Definitely
else?
Definitely. There's so much, because I feel like I've learned so many lessons. I've been working on Glowbar since March 2017. So it's definitely been a journey. And I think the first thing is patience. You know, when you have an idea in your head, you just want it to be a realization immediately. And I'm an Aries, and so I'm definitely like that. I'm like an incredibly impatient person. I think of an idea today and I want to make it a reality tomorrow. And I had to learn the hard way that things take time. It takes time to have products made. It takes time to source the right materials. And if you want a brick and mortar space, it takes a lot of time to find the right space, to go through the process of securing it. If you then have to change the use case, that takes time too. And then the build takes time. So definitely those things are important. I think the second thing is the thing that no one really likes to talk about, but it's money. So if you want to start a business, really like figure out what your financial situation is going to be, both from a personal perspective and for the business. So you want to make sure that you have enough money to cover your basic operations when you begin, because you always say, my idea is amazing, so from day one, I'm going to make loads of money and I'm going to be able to pay my team. So like, if you have to have a team, you think that. And I have a team of 8 people. So it's a lot of responsibility on my end. But you realize soon that you're going to have, firstly, at the beginning, no one's going to know about you. It still takes time. Even if you've got a great Instagram, even if you're mentioned, like we were in Vogue before we even opened, still doesn't mean you're going to get people coming through the door. So you need to make sure that, you know, you sort of set up financially for that. And then from a personal perspective as well, you're like, you always think, I've got an amazing idea, I'm going to make loads of money. Because like, you know, let's face it, you start a business because you're passionate, you care about it, but you also like, you want to be successful financially, you know, and it just doesn't happen as fast as you want it to. So you just have to be really, really smart and really, really wise. And these are things that people don't like talking about, especially in England, because people don't like talking about money at all. But I actually tell a lot of people mm-hmm. that I'm like, in the end of the day, you don't want to be stressed about that. Mm-hmm. So set yourself up for success from day one.
Yeah, that's such practical advice, honestly.
I know, I feel so old.
You're really adulting.
Yeah, seriously.
So I have a million questions kind of in the wellness realm. I want to know more about Glowbar. So can you tell us a bit more, like, who are your clientele? What do people come to Glowbar for?
It's really a mixed bag, actually. So, I mean, 95% of our clients are women. I actually thought it was going to be 100%, but we do have sometimes 10% men who come in.
Wow.
And at the beginning I was like, only gay guys will come. But actually we have a lot of straight men who come to Glowbar. They actually find it very soothing. Sure. They love the feminine energy. It's very calming for them. And they love the moon milks, and they love matcha. So for them, it's better than going to sort of like a Scandi coffee shop. So that's kind of, in terms of sort of like gender, that's our split. And then honestly, it's all ages. I really thought we would be super millennial focused, but we're, you know, we find we have women between the ages of 16 up to 50 coming to Globa. It's really spread. I think, you know, definitely in the evening, it is more millennial. People come after work and stuff. It's always the, you know, sort of the late 20s, early 30s group. But weekends, mid-mornings, it's literally lucky dip, anyone. And we have so many different, people come for different reasons. So, you know, about 50% of our clients come in for the infrared saunas, first timers, regulars, people who are traveling, who, you know, they do them in New York or LA and they've, you know, found out they can do them in London. It's great for getting over jet lag, great for de-puffing after a long journey. So we have a lot of them come in. And then we have people come in for the cafe. Like, they love our adaptogens. They love the moon milks. You know, we do incredible smoothie bowls, and it's really hard in central London to find anywhere that does them the way we do them. So there's some great places in Chelsea and Notting Hill, but nowhere in W1. So yeah, it's definitely mixed. And then you know, we have a lot of people who'll come in for everything. So they come in and they do a sauna, and then they typically order a moon milk. They might purchase an adaptogen blend while they're at it, ask a few questions, and then they sort of go about their day.
Yeah, it's, yeah, such a variety too.
Definitely, yeah. I like to describe it as like a wellness concept space, because we touch on various different areas of well-being, but the common thread is that everything's natural, everything's ancient healing in terms of Orient, and everything basically makes you feel happier.
So. Sure. Okay, so I feel like this is a great next question as far as like, what are adaptogens for people that are like totally new to this? I will be the first to say I am not on the adaptogen herb train. Like, where do we start and like, what are they?
So I think firstly, it's definitely important to sort of define what an adaptogen is. So adaptogens are healing herbs, essentially, and they derive from various different traditions. So a lot of people always say, oh, is this Ayurveda? That's like a massive misconception. So yes, there are herbs that are used in Ayurveda, but they're not like Ayurvedic. So there isn't like a specific herb that's good for your specific dosha, for example. Like, whatever your dosha is, you can take, you know, the herbs depending on what your actual need is. So they're from Ayurveda, they're from traditional Chinese medicine, they're from shamanic healing in Central South America, and then they're also used in like jamus, which are sort of medicinal tonics in Indonesia and Malaysia, sort of that sort of like South Pacific area. So they really stem from all over the world, and that's kind of what I think is really beautiful. You could literally be taking two or three different herbs, and they can be from all over the place. They're not just from one thinking pattern. And what an adaptogen essentially is that it's a herb that helps the body adapt to stress. So a while ago, like 30 or 40 years ago, a Russian scientist discovered that all these different herbs from all these different sort of like healing traditions had this sort of commonality that they helped the body cope with stress in different ways. And at the same time, they were non-toxic. You could be used for long periods of time, and that they were incredibly normalizing. And what I love about that is that essentially, they just help bring your body to an equilibrium. So a lot of people say, I'm scared of taking that because I don't want to be too much of this, or I don't want to be too much of that. Like, I don't want to get too relaxed. Like, I don't want to take ashwagandha, which is a herb for managing your stress levels, because I don't want to be too relaxed. I don't want to take mucuna, which is a herb for sort of like elevating your mood, because I don't want to be too happy and bouncing off the walls. I don't want to take lion's mane because I don't want to be too focused. I'm like, it's not Adderall, you know? So it just brings you back to a normal state of being versus putting you like over the line, over or under the line in any one way. So that's what's really wonderful. And you have so many different ones. You know, you've got medicinal mushrooms, which count as adaptogens. You have roots, you have berries, you have leaves, you have beans. So it's quite amazing the variety of different sort of sources that can count as an adaptogen.
Okay, amazing. And so for someone who is brand new to adaptogens, where would I start? So is it like ingesting like a powder or like a pill or putting it in like a tea? Like, what is kind of like, I guess, the easiest way to get started?
So there are loads of different ways, and it really depends on your lifestyle. So that's why I say, so we sell powders, because for me, that's just the way I've been taking them for the last 6 years. So when I first started, I took them as a pill. It was just the only way I could find them. But then I was getting more and more interested in them, and I was taking up to 8 different pills a day, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is like too much. It felt really medicinal. So then I ended up sourcing powders from different health stores all around the states, and I ended up mixing them in mason jars and just putting them into my smoothies and protein shakes. Okay. And I thought that was really easy, because I was doing a shake every time I went to the gym, or I was doing a smoothie, or I just put them in my overnight oats or whatever, and I'd be like, great, I've got my fix in for the day, and I've been able to incorporate them into something that I love, which is food. Okay. So that's why we sell them as a powder in Glow Bar. So if you're the kind of person who just sort of loves experimenting, you love food, you know, like, you know, you love doing different smoothies or soups or porridge, then the powders are perfect. You want to make moon milks, which are sort of non-caffeinated lattes, where you just sort of like, you warm up some almond milk and you put in cacao and a herb and maybe some coconut sugar. Like that's, you know, that's a great way. If you're literally like, I only drink water, that's literally all I drink every day, mm-hmm. just water, then maybe a pill would be easier for you. And then you can also get tinctures. So if you're the kind of person who just wants to get it like over and done with as well, but you don't like swallowing pills, mm-hmm. you can get like a concentrated tincture. They're quite potent in their taste, but you literally put it under your tongue the same way you would do with like a CBD oil and just swallow it.
Okay, cool. That seems really easy. Throwing mm-hmm. it in a smoothie, or like I do a lot of overnight oats, or
yeah, so it'd be super
in a tea
simple
or something like
yeah.
that. What are, I guess, kind of the most like well-known adaptogens or most popular?
Ashwagandha is 100% the most famous adaptogen out there. It's okay. been having its moment for the last, I would say, 18 months now. It's our bestseller. It's the one that I got into. Meghan Markle takes it. Jennifer Aniston takes it. So there's lots of sort of high profile celebrities who've been into wellness for a long time who take it ashwagandha from various brands. Some take ours, some take other brands. And so I think it's because I always call it the gateway drug to adaptogens, because it helps to manage your cortisol levels. So cortisol is the hormone produced by your adrenal gland, and it's called the stress management hormone. It's basically what's produced when your body goes into flight or fight reaction. And our bodies are basically constantly in fight or flight reaction today. Back in the day when we were cavemen, it happened when we ran away from a dinosaur. Obviously, there are no dinosaurs today, but the equivalent to our dinosaur today in 2019 is the comparison game on Instagram, the long commute, you know, the three parties in one evening, the fighting with your boyfriend, the swiping left on Tinder or swiping right and no one's still responding to you. You know, these things are our versions of dinosaurs, and they're putting our body into a heightened state of stress. So everyone basically can manage from ashwagandha, because what it does is it helps to sort of reset our cortisol levels and bring us back to having a healthy amount produced. And the way I describe it is that you want it to basically look like a wave. So like a slow, gentle wave is what your cortisol levels should look like. But unfortunately today, it's basically like a very, very steep hill, and then you get to the top and you don't want to be at the top, because then you can crash and have something very serious called cortisol fatigue. Right. So ashwagandha just helps to like reduce that.
Okay.
So that's super, super popular. And then a lot of the brainy ones are really popular and famous at the moment. So the mushrooms are like lion's mane, reishi, cordyceps. These are all ones that are great for inflammation and for brain health. And so they're very buzzy at the moment too.
Okay. Amazing. We'll include some links too, so people can kind of like
peruse definitely.
Them. Okay. Awesome. I want to touch on the sauna pods. So they sound amazing. We kind of touched a little bit on the benefits. You were saying depuffing. So mm-hmm. like after a flight, what are some other benefits, and then what does a session in a sauna pod kind of look like?
So they are amazing. I would recommend that anyone, like no matter where in the world you are, find somewhere that does infrared saunas. They are very different from a traditional sauna. It's a much deeper sweat, but at a lower temperature. So that's the main thing to kind of realize the difference, because everyone's always like, oh, is it just a normal sauna? So there's no humidity, it's dry heat. The rays penetrate your body at the same time as heating up the room around you. So then what happens is that you're basically warming at the same time as the room, and it creates this incredibly deep sweat. Your heart rate gets quite fast. You produce an oxygen surge at the same time. So the benefits are boundless, but some of the ones that we really love to focus on are, so it produces endorphins in your brain. So those are the happy hormones that you get after having sex, going for a run, eating really good chocolate, having a glass of red wine. So you get a bucket loads of those endorphins. You leave feeling really happy and content. It helps to regulate your sleep patterns. So if you're the kind of person who's not sleeping well at night, or some nights you sleep 3 hours because you've been really busy. And then after that, you're able to get 8 hours, but you can't really rest the full 8 hours because you slept 3 hours the night before. It's great for that. It stimulates collagen production, which we all need. No matter how old you are, extra collagen is always needed because it's not just about having youthful skin, but it's also about bone health as well, and tendon health and muscle health. It helps to reduce inflammation in the body. So if you're active, if you work out a lot, it really helps to reduce the inflammation caused as a result of working out. But it also is great if you tend to get sick around winter time. Inflammation can also weaken your immune system, so it's great for that. And one of my personal favorites is that because the sweat is so incredibly deep, you sweat so much. And you know, there's a lot of information out there about pollution and its effect on the skin. And basically, the size of a pollution molecule is 1/8 of the size of your pore. So if you can think about how much pollution is basically able to enter our pores on a daily basis, especially if you're living in a city like London, New York, Paris, Singapore, Hong Kong, where there's incredible amounts of pollution, our pores are just clogged. There's no amount of you know, micellar water that's going to get rid of that. And so you literally sweat out pollution. Like, people are always like, oh my God, my hands or my towel looks dirty when I wipe my face. And I'm like, that's literally all the pollution, all the gunk that's coming off. You're also like shedding the skin cells. And so, you know, after a session or two, you realize that your skin is so much clearer, so much brighter. Like, you're literally glowing from the inside out. It's amazing.
Wow. That sounds ideal. And then the pods, they're singles, but then you can you do it with a friend? Did I read
yes,
that?
Yes, definitely. Okay. So they're all the same size, but we have two pods that have basically, so all the pods live within a room.
Okay.
So basically you walk down a corridor and there are four doors down the corridor, and inside each door is a little room. I wish they could be bigger, but W1 space is limited.
I get it.
So they're little rooms. Within the room you have a shelf, you get there's a diffuser. If you've chosen to rent a water bottle, then we put a nice cold water bottle in there. There's a hanging plant, there's a painting on the wall, and then there's a mirror on the back of the door just to help open up the space. And then within that room there is the infrared sauna, which are the glass door, glass ceiling, and then it's sort of like these like Scandi wooden walls and floor. And so the reason why we kind of have them within these little rooms is A, it's private, and then B, if you get hot, you can just open the door, the hot air floods out into that sort of lobby space, and then you can kind of like get your bearings and then close the door again. So that we have two pods that have much larger lobby areas. Mm-hmm. So we recommend those can be booked if you're going in with a friend, and then the two smaller ones you can just use if you're on your own. And everyone's different. So personally, I don't like sharing them with my friends. I like the solitude of being in the sauna. For me, it's incredibly therapeutic. Like, I cry every time I have a sauna because it's quite challenging and it brings up a lot of like the stuff, because I tend to push my emotions down a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm a barrier. Mm-hmm. I'm a massive pressure cooker. So for me, like, then sort of the difficulty of the sweat session,
sure,
sweating that much, it's just really cathartic, and I just like let it out. And I also just like don't like being that close to my girlfriends when we're sure that sweaty. I'm like, ugh. But a lot of people, yeah, they do book it with a friend because they need someone to talk to, basically, to pass the time. Like, the shelf allows you to put your phone on the side and listen to a podcast or listen, right, to a meditation soundtrack. Lots of people do Headspace in there or listen, okay, to music, but some people still, they just want to talk. And actually, we have a lot of girlfriends who come in, and they say that for them that's their like therapy session, because it is hard. They're sharing everything, and then they're like letting a lot off their chest, and they're sharing more with their friends they would naturally do, mm-hmm, maybe at dinner, because they're also scared of what other people might be thinking if they hear their conversation, yeah, and stuff. So,
but you make a good point. I feel like it's also a good opportunity to have some me time, mm-hmm, maybe like meditate and just like really kind of unwind on your own. It sounds
exactly
ideal.
It is ideal. And we don't recommend taking the phones into the pods with you because, sure, it's really, really hot. So if you think, yeah, about when you go to the beach and your phone's out in the
it
sun,
it's black and, yeah, it's like, yeah, overheating or whatever.
Exactly. So then you just have to leave it on. You can leave it on the shelf and put on whatever your soundtrack is, mm-hmm, or meditation, your podcast, and you are sort of being forced to relax and, yeah, enjoy your time by yourself.
Absolutely. I love that. So that kind of leads me into my next question. I want to ask you sort of what your approach to beauty is, and you kind of just answered it. Do you feel like it does all start from within with, you know, supplements and what you're eating, or is it also about, you know, skincare for you? Like, what are your sort of thoughts?
I think it's definitely a balance of both. So it does start from within. I think that at the very basic, your diet is the most important thing. So before you even think about adaptogens, before you even think about expensive skincare, infrared saunas, like you really need to make sure that your diet is clean and balanced. So I am not a vegan. I'm not fully gluten-free. And obviously I drink tequila. But for me, it's all about finding balance. So I'm 80%, most weeks, 90% clean. And then I'll go out for dinner. And when I go out for dinner, I really, you know, I'll enjoy myself. I'll have the fresh made pasta. I'll have the incredible chocolate dessert. I'll have a cocktail. I'll have a glass of wine. But typically day to day, I make sure that I'm dairy free, gluten free, alcohol free, you know, sugar free. And I don't drink coffee. I drink matcha. And sort of leading a lifestyle that's like that the majority of the time helps me to have like clear skin as possible. It prevents hormonal breakouts. You know, it prevents you feeling like you've got dull skin. And also just like it's great for your digestive system as well. And your digestion is really related to both your skin health and your mental health as well. So I really believe it begins with that. And then if you're looking to then sort of step things up, I really recommend adaptogens because they do help to manage your stress levels and they help to manage the effects of stress. And stress is one of the key contributors to bad skin. So I know a lot of people who say, but I have a really clean diet. Like I don't eat gluten, I don't eat dairy, I don't drink coffee, but I'm up till midnight every night. I'm running around like a crazy person. I live really far away, but I work here, blah, blah, blah. I'm running around, you know, I'm exercising all the time, which is great for you, but it does put your body into a constant state of stress. I don't know why I'm having these breakouts. And I'm like, well, you know, look at your lifestyle. So, you know, adaptogens really help to sort of manage the effects of those sort of lifestyles. But then when it comes to skincare, you know, I'm a believer of natural where necessary and where possible. So if my skin is doing particularly well, I'll only use natural products. I'll only use natural face washes, face oils. I tend to do face oils over moisturizers generally. But then I use two chemical products, I guess, so non-green products.
Sure.
So I use an acid by Drunk Elephant, which is like the cleanest acid I've been able to find. Mm-hmm. And that helps definitely when I'm having a breakout. And then I use the Sunday Riley, sort of the Luna retinol and the oil. And that really helps with hyperpigmentation. So there are some things that I've found that I can't personally solve with natural skincare. So I've had to, you know, I've branched out to brands that are trusted and sure, high quality ingredients, but it is just super, super personal, I think, and about your philosophy. But if you're thinking about just general skin health, you know, you want to make sure that whatever you put in or on your body is as low in toxins, low in chemicals as possible, as less processed, less, inflammatory in any way whatsoever. And that's like the best way. I sort of gone on a bit about this, but I really believe that's the best way to make sure you've just got clear, healthy skin, which everyone once.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So I can't not ask you sort of about the dewy glow. Everyone wants the dewy glow when it comes to skin. So from your perspective, like what's the best way to sort of like achieve that? Is it skincare? Is it diet? Is there like a couple specific things you think?
I think firstly, you want to make sure that you don't have dull skin, right? Because like that dewy, it's all about looking fresh and having that baby soft skin. There's a herb that we sell at Global called Heshowu, and that is definitely the best herb to take if you're looking to achieve that kind of skin. Mm-hmm. It basically helps to generate new skin cells and to shed the excess ones. So you're getting that like fresh baby skin constantly, and you're making sure you're not holding any of the dead skin. And then I actually think the best thing from a topical perspective is to use oils. So use face oils versus moisturizers, because moisturizers absorb really, really quick and they actually can suck out a lot of the moisture in your skin long term. But using a really good quality face oil gives you sort of like, it doesn't make your skin oily, but it gives you that kind of like really nice dewiness. So like, yeah. There's a brand called La Prunia that I love.
Okay.
There is founded by three sisters based out of California. It's a plum seed oil brand and it's super hydrating. Doesn't make you feel greasy, but gives you that really nice dewiness. So.
Okay. Amazing. We're going to have to include that too. So yeah. To kind of end on a last question, more around sort of the anxiety and stress realm. If you had to leave the audience with like a couple tips or sort of tweaks or changes they could do to their routine to sort of just help with like overall stress levels, like what would you leave them with?
I would definitely invest in an ashwagandha. So whether or not it's our brand or another brand, whatever works for you, a tincture, a powder, a pill, definitely invest in ashwagandha. I think that it's something that's super easy to incorporate into your life. You know, we're all taking vitamins and minerals and whatever these days. Supplements are so natural and, you know, to our routines these days. So ashwagandha, you know, it's 100% natural and organic, so there's no harm in taking it. And then I think it's the second thing I would do is just try to spend time to yourself every evening. So that's one big thing. I'm really routine oriented in the evenings. I don't tend to go out a lot midweek. The weekends, yeah, of course, but Monday through Friday, I'll go to the gym, do SoulCycle now that it's open. So excited.
Yes, I know. So happy they came over tonight, actually. Oh, nice.
And, you know, for me, going home, like having my time to myself where like I make a drink, like a, you know, a moon milk, and I spend some time reflecting on my day, you know, whether or not you're someone who likes to journal, or whether you like to craft, something that is non-technology oriented by yourself, I would recommend doing that. And then I think the third thing is as well is like just about affirmations, like say something positive to yourself once a day, you know, like we should not have to and cannot rely on other people to make us happy and to make us feel worthy, because everyone's living in their own world. So like tell yourself something that you know you believe in yourself, whether it's I'm beautiful, I'm capable, you know, like anything is possible, my time is coming, whatever it is. Like just say that to yourself once a day when you're alone in the bathroom. No one can hear you. No one's going to laugh at you. So just like, why not? You know, what have you got to lose by saying it? I think that putting that energy out into the universe is really powerful.
Yeah, I absolutely love that tip. It's like coming from a positive place and just like giving yourself that like daily reminder, because you're right, like no one else is gonna do it for you.
Yeah, exactly. So we're the makers of our own destinies.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's like the perfect place to end. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
But before you go, where can everyone keep up with you, find Glowbar, like give us the spiel?
Right, so you can come find us in person at 70 Mortimer Street in London. We're literally 5 minutes from Oxford Circus Tube Station. Otherwise, you can find us on social. We're at GlowBarLDN. And then if you want to follow me, it's at Sasha.Sabapathy. That's quite long, but you can find me through the GlowBar handle as well.
Amazing.
So yeah, hopefully see you guys online and offline soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for coming on. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode. We will catch you next time. But please, please, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave a quick review. And we will see you out there.
Bye.
Bye.